Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan and from Midtown Manhattan. It's Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
Oh, what's up? Everything's up, apparently, before I even had my coffee this morning. Just this avalanche of football news.
It really never stops, does it? We were here the other day for a monster Champions League recap. Then we come in last night, spit out a couple group previews, and bang, we wake up this morning, and the news just keeps on coming. So we've got an emergency podcast for all of you out there who were as surprised by, I'll say at least me, in seeing the Zidane news, although you texted me something earlier today that was to the contrary.
Yep, just on reflection, Andrew, I don't think I'm quite as surprised as I initially was. Obviously, the way that he did it was kind of very quick and straight to the point, even in the press conference. But I think he assessed the mood around Real Madrid. He probably looked at the squad, looked at what he's achieved in a very short period of time and thought, this is the right time to go out, particularly at a club like this.
Yeah, well, let's go deeper on that, because one of the questions that I had was why now, so quickly in the aftermath of having just won his third straight Champions League. I'm going to read a quote to you, and it kind of echoes what you just said from Zidane. This is what he said today at his press conference. Quote, "The time is right. It's not a decision I've taken lightly. I thought about it carefully, and it's the right decision, even though I imagine many may not agree. After 3 years, Real Madrid needs a change, another way of working, another idea, if we are to continue winning. I feel it's going to be difficult to continue winning, and because I'm a winner, I'm going." I find there's one part of that in particular that I find most interesting, where he says, after 3 years, Real Madrid needs a change, another way of working, another idea, if we are to continue winning. He says Real Madrid needs a change. He doesn't say there that he needs a change. Now, he did kind of say that at other points of his press conference, but does that seem strange to you that with Real Madrid just having won three consecutive Champions Leagues, he would be saying that Real Madrid needs a change? Seems like it was working fairly well.
Yeah, but I think that's not what I took from it so much. I think I took away from what Dermot Corrigan took away from it too, in that he said the biggest takeaway for Zidane was wanting to make sure everybody understood that he was making this decision himself, that he realized lots of people would not agree, but that it was very important for him to go out on his own terms at the moment he chose himself. I just think with, like I said, the age profile of the players, Andrew, and a lot of them, you know, in what will be weird contract areas, including Bale and Ronaldo, Modric is 33 years of age, like key players. I think he just looked at the whole landscape of the club and thought, I'm exceptionally well here, and to stay any longer might be to taint it.
Let me ask you this, because this was something I wrote down, and it's exactly what you're saying right now. Does this in any way feel to you a bit like Sir Alex leaving Manchester United when he did, like getting out while the getting was good, like leaving right before the storm hits? Is that what you're hinting at?
It's a little bit different for me. Let me just give you a quote from Florentino Perez when Carlo Ancelotti was sacked a year after delivering the Decima and after bridging a 12-year gap to their last Champions League win. What did Ancelotti do wrong? I don't know. The demands here at Real Madrid are very high. I think Fergie's was different. I think Fergie had gone as far as he wanted to. He'd also, I think, realised that the next Champions League for him, the third Champions League, wasn't going to happen with the squad and the profile of the squad. So I suppose in that sense, maybe there is a parallel that probably Zidane feels this third Champions League, this three in a row, was as much as he could kind of wring out of this bunch of players, particularly with their age. So there's a similarity there. But I think he just looked at the overall history of where things go wrong for managers at Real Madrid. And look, the league position probably gave him food for thought as well. Is it going to get better next season? Probably massive investment, huge overhauling, drama surrounding two of his stars in Bale and Ronaldo. And he maybe just said to himself, I don't want the hassle.
Yeah, I could see that. He strikes me as a really intelligent, thoughtful person. I'm sure all of that has crossed his mind. I saw Gab Marcotti wrote today that the average age of Real Madrid's starting 11 is 29. He also wrote, and this really surprised me, but when you go back and think about it, it's true. You know, they have not added a new starting player to their first team since 2014 when they added Keylor Navas and Toni Kroos?
Yeah, I thought about that today, actually.
Yeah.
Zidane, you know the way I always say to you, oh, well, managers traditionally are judged on the people they bring into the club, the success of their signings. Well, Zidane's management job at Real Madrid has been nothing of the sort. It's been a case of having tremendous talent, tremendous young talent coming through in Isco and Asensio, and managing all those egos and all that mix, as volatile and as skillful as it can be, to create something like what he did. His management job was more like a guy with pottery and clay on a wheel. He can't add any more clay. He's just got to make something beautiful out of what he has.
Yeah, and that's beautifully said, too. What a poet you are. But I do wonder also if Real Madrid winning this Champions League, do you feel like maybe that victory kind of papers over some of the cracks that are actually there? Like, you've talked about the age factor and how it's a team that is getting increasingly older. But, you know, right now, what are we all talking about over these last few days? Real Madrid and whatever dynasty we want to consider this to be, we're not really talking about the fact that they still finished 17 points behind Barcelona. A Barcelona team, by the way, which was supposed to be, like, vulnerable and there for the getting after having just lost Neymar and Iniesta being as old as he is. You know, it was supposed to be kind of time for Real Madrid to pounce. You know, we're not talking about their Champions League run. All we've said about it was, look how impressive this was. They defeated the Italian champions, the German champions, the French champions. But what we're not saying is they struggled with Tottenham in the group stage, lost to them once and drew with them once. They struggled with Juventus. They struggled with Bayern Munich. They struggled with Liverpool in the final until Salah got hurt, and then the game sort of changed. But, you know, they got their title, and you can't take that away from them. It was an incredibly impressive run, but it was not necessarily a walk in the park in a year where they went out prematurely in the Copa del Rey and got hammered in La Liga. So I do sort of see where you're coming from in saying that maybe Zidane sees more than what the common fan or analyst sees with what's going on at this club.
No, I think you're right. I think he sees the end of a cycle, and he sees that the rebuild is just something he doesn't want to be involved in for the reasons I've outlined already. And you're right. If you analyze it closely this season, I know they had a tough run in the Champions League, but they made heavy weather of many of the challenges and hurdles that they successfully hurdled in the end, but it was by no means a romp, or it was no means a dominant performance all the way through. And at times during this campaign, you looked at the team and you looked at the way they were playing and you thought, is this a team that's on its last legs? And maybe it is.
Yeah. Ronaldo, Modric, Ramos, Benzema, Marcelo, they're all on the other side of 30. Now, most of their starting unit is locked up until the year 2021. But like you said, Ronaldo, his future seems still unclear. If I had to guess, I believe he'll be back there. But that's based on nothing more than just what we've heard from him the last few seasons and having seen the way that's played out. Bale, I truly don't know. Now, I don't want to just gloss over the fact that they do have some young talent waiting in the wings. Like Marco Asensio could slot in and just be a superstar, it seems, right away. Lucas, you know, many people feel the same. And you know, there's even the word of, you know, who knows what Neymar's future will be and whether or not Real Madrid will be a player for his services. So, yeah, ultimately, it's Real Madrid, though. Like, we can talk about all their shortcomings, but they're just going to, whatever they have, like, whatever problems they may have, they are going to reload. Whoever comes in and takes over for Zidane at this job, like, they're not going to be walking into a complete disaster, right?
No, they're not, but they may be entering a period of transition, which has already kind of come about, or at least started in their league. And, you know, rebuilds are difficult things, especially at a club where winning now is absolutely essential. And, you know, you've got one superstar on the way out, if not two. You've got potentially another superstar who is unhappy in his current position and maybe wants in to be the main man. That's a lot of upheaval, whatever way you look at it, for any team, and it's got to be managed, and it's clear that Zidane doesn't want to be involved in that.
Yeah, you mentioned this earlier with the Ancelotti reference, but I think this is the most stressful job in the world, too. Like, and I'm not even saying, like, that is not meant as an exaggeration. I mean, Zidane himself, he used the word disgaste, which means worn out or out of gas. He said that in his press conference. I could see that. I mean, there are egos in that room. Now, he can maybe handle it better than some, because when Zidane walks in a room, like, that's a guy that just has a presence. You know, he's got a gravitas. Players who may ignore another manager will listen to him. But I'm sure that, you know, he's a guy that's probably used to going to a certain place and just, like, people listen and stop what they're doing. You know, do we know that that's true at this club, that Ronaldo is just, like, that everybody just falls in line with everything that Zidane wants? I don't know. So I could easily see this being, you know, a very stressful job for anybody, even a guy of Zidane's stature. So I could see that whole idea of being worn out or out of gas.
It also has to do with the way that he dealt with the press. I mean, he dealt in such a dignified fashion with a press that is as feral as anywhere in the world. And it probably eclipses England in terms of the absolute focus and microscope you were under. And also, look at the way he came into the job. He was jettisoned in after Rafa Benitez got the sack. So he kind of hit the ground running. He had to learn on the job, and I'm sure that's a tiring process. So he leaves a better manager, certainly. Everybody's commented on his grace with the media, but, like, even just outside of the club, the focus and the spotlight and the attention and the way you have to deport yourself day after day, that is tiring.
Florentino Perez said at the press conference, he made it pretty clear that this was not a thing that he wanted by any stretch of the imagination, that he wanted Zidane to stay, but Zidane made up his mind. And so be it. Yeah, I couldn't help but think when I saw this, I kind of like went back in my mind to mid-season around December, January, prior to the knockout stage of the Champions League having started, when Zidane's name was being kind of dragged through the mud in terms of rumors that he might be sacked, with where they were at in the table and where, you know, them finishing runners-up in the group. I wonder if any of that stuck with him. Like, sure enough, it all came out roses in the end. They win the Champions League, and Florentino Perez is hugging him, and it's all love. But I wonder if Zidane thought, look, I just won back-to-back Champions Leagues with this side. I just won a league title last season. Like, and here we are in December, and you know, I'm being talked about as a guy who could lose his job. This is madness. I wonder if maybe some of that couldn't quite exit his mind when he was making this decision.
I'm sure it did, and also, I think this season was the first, well, maybe not the first, but the first, yeah, actually, I will say it was the first. It was the first blip in what's been champagne and roses since he took over from Rafa Benitez.
Yeah.
And he probably learned a lot in terms of the criticism, the rumor, the speculation, and thought, I've got to leave this job on my terms for it to be viewed as an overall success. And what a perfect way to go out.
I believe this is a hot. Here comes my hot take. You ready? He will manage Real Madrid again. This will not be the last time that he patrols the sideline at the Bernabeu.
I would agree with that. I think there will be some crisis down the line, some typically white hanky shaking crisis that will come along, and he will ride in like a balding Zorro to rescue them once again. I can see that happening, definitely. What's interesting coming out of this is that there's still going to be question marks about what he would be like in a normal, if there is such a thing anymore in football, but in a normal managerial environment, buying and selling players who are of a lesser standard than what he's just been dealing with, managing egos that are not quite the same as what he's just been managing. So it's interesting to see where his next move will be.
It does. You're right. It does seem like the list of places where he could go is really, really limited. I mean, for me, it comes down to Manchester City. Where are you? Are you in like a kitchen right now? There's people working. Things are being dropped. This is highly, highly unprofessional for an emergency podcast, no less.
Yeah, well, you know, you just have to make do with what you've got. Move on.
Wow, you won't even answer the question. That only leads to my curiosity, and it only makes me want to ask you more.
No, it's just I am close to a hallway. I'm sorry. Is it too noisy for you, Andrew, for this emergency? Emergencies often happen in stressful times.
You sound very stressed. But you're right, though. Like, he can only really manage. What are the clubs that he could possibly go to? It's Manchester City, PSG, I would say the French national team after the World Cup ends, maybe heading into the next European Championships. Would you put Juventus on that list?
Yeah, possibly. I mean, that would seem like a fairy tale return to the old lady. It's funny, I was thinking about France today, and the reason I thought France might work is for exactly the reasons I've outlined that Real Madrid worked for him. He knows how to manage mass amount of talent and a mass amount of egos, and also get some kind of a way in which he can harness all the talent available to him, even if some of that talent has to come off the bench. And that kind of, that's almost like a job description for the French job.
Yeah. Now, moving beyond his future, let's look at Real Madrid's future and who their next manager could be. This is Gab Marcotti on ESPN FC earlier today talking about some of the candidates.
The name of Guti as a kind of sort of continuity candidate has come up. Obviously, this would be an in-house figure, somebody who knows the club well, who's very popular with the fans, who would effectively be doing what Zidane did. He would try to replicate the same management style. Obviously, Guti, part of the original Galacticos at the turn of the millennium. Should they go beyond that, then they really would be ripping up the script. I think should they go and try to look at somebody like Arsene Wenger has been mentioned, that seems a bit far-fetched, but obviously Antonio Conte is going to be on the market. Most other top managers, obviously, already in a job at this stage. Should they go down that route, I think at that stage they might as well blow up the team and maybe, you know, try to cash in on some of the veterans, try to freshen things up. My sense is that they're not going to do that. My sense is they're going to try to squeeze another title out of this group, obviously make some changes this summer. And if you're going to do that, it probably makes sense to look in-house to somebody like Guti.
Guti's been a part of Real Madrid for, I believe, 24 years. So that could be somebody. I don't know what the fan base would make of that. If he's, you know, they may find him a beloved figure, but is he a big enough name? I don't know. I don't really know. But the idea that Gab brings up there, which he then refutes himself, so he doesn't take it seriously, but the idea that they could blow this up, no way, right? I mean, I know we said the average age of the starting 11 was 29 years old, but it's still a team that is largely in its prime. You got to go make another run, at least one more run at a league title or a Champions League title, so I don't think that's an option either.
I don't know. It depends what you define by blowing it up. I mean, if Ronaldo or Bale leaves, that's essentially a mini/large explosion.
Not Bale. I mean, Bale was a fringe first teamer over the last couple seasons. I know his impact. Like, I know what we think of him, but Real Madrid, I mean, I don't see him leaving as them blowing it up. And by the way, they'll probably get a lot of money back for him and be able to do something with it.
Look, they most likely will look to rebuild in stages. That's the only way. I don't think they can completely tear up the whole thing. Although this is Real Madrid, and you don't know. Throwing money at the problem and large amounts of players has been done before. But I'm not. It'll be interesting to see how they move forward with this. But I think a couple of players are definitely going to leave. A couple of players, they may, like Gab said, try and cash in and make some money now while there's any money to be made from them. I don't know.
Two words, Wenger in.
Just on Guti there. Guti sounds like the Ryan Giggs option. You know the phrase that came out every time about United? It was give it to Giggsy till the end of the season. Well, maybe it's give it to Guti now for the next 2 years. As for Wenger, you know what? I spent most of the early 90s, every summer, or sorry, the early 2000s, every summer reading that Arsene Wenger was on his way to Real Madrid. I never envisioned in 2018 that would even be suggested in this fashion.
I know he spoke about this actually the other day on BN Sports. He said, Real Madrid, I think I turned them down two or three times. It's one of the teams I loved when I was a kid. I just felt that it was a very sensitive period for Arsenal Football Club. When we built the Emirates Stadium, the banks asked me to commit for 5 years. And the time that Madrid made an approach, it was inside the 5 years, and I thought, no, I cannot do that. That would be to betray my club. Now he's unencumbered.
But the times and the sands have shifted, Andrew, completely. Wenger's not the manager he was. His tactics aren't the modern tactics that they were. I just don't see this. And it would seem to be, considering his age, and the long period of time he spent at Arsenal, it would be weird short-termism, and it would not be... I mean, if we're hearing about Guti as some kind of continuity appointment, what would Wenger fall under?
Yeah, I mean, certainly...
Back in time, like an alternative reality. It would be almost like some kind of a sci-fi film where you go back to a parallel universe that might have happened in the early 2000s.
For what it's
too
worth.
Weird.
Yeah, I'm... pretty much joking entirely. I don't see that happening. I want to ask you this, though, and I almost don't want to answer this question, but I want to hear your answer to it. So Mauricio Pochettino most certainly would have been a serious candidate for this job had he not just signed his extension with Spurs. Even with that being what it is, and Real Madrid's, you know, spending power, you know, who knows what sort of negotiations they could work out if they really wanted him above all else, and they start talking to Daniel Levy. What would it take? Like, if Real Madrid came to Daniel Levy and said, okay, here's the deal. We want Poch. We're taking him. But let's work something out. And they offered, I mean, you know, $30 million and bail. Do you do it?
I can't, how am I supposed to speculate on something like that?
I don't know. That's what we do.
Ah, come on, Andrew. Like, seriously, I think if the way I see this playing out is that if, say, Guti or another manager comes in and it's not quite working out over the next season, and that coincides with promises made to Pochettino, which he's asked for before the season, that are not kept by Daniel Levy, then I think the door opens again. But, I mean, Bale plus whatever, I'm not getting into that. I don't even know what that means. It's
you know, I got to say, I don't care for your attitude today. How about that?
No, seriously, you're literally talking in tabloid terms about what will it take. I'm telling you, there'll be a set of circumstances, and it'll probably come down to Spurs not fulfilling their promises to Pochettino in terms of making this team a team that contend at the next level, which is win a title.
I was trying to throw out a fun hypothetical, obviously a thing I didn't know would be taken
Bale
so seriously.
Bale plus, a 29-year-old with a history of serious injury. Bale plus, that is nonsense. I can't even countenance talk like that. You sound like the Daily Star, the Andrew Star newspaper.
Interesting. You have anything else on Real Madrid?
Not really, no. That's pretty much it, except I don't know if I'm going to have to steel myself for a summer or next few weeks of speculation. I actually hope whatever appointment they make, they do it quickly.
Yeah, I would hope that too. Let's see. We have a couple other things worth mentioning before getting out. We just published our Group C World Cup preview, and thank God we published it when we did, because we basically spent the entire time discussing Paulo Guerrero's suspension for Peru. And then today, this morning, we find out the Swiss court that heard his case will allow him to play at this World Cup, a thing that both you and I did not think was going to wind up being the resolution.
It's incredible. The Swiss tribunal, according to the BBC, has now ruled that the extension was unjustified and is provisionally deprived of effect, which leaves Guerrero free to play in Russia. I'm delighted. I think it's great. I think it's the right decision, although from what I understand legally, it means that his livelihood in terms of club football is not guaranteed, that the ban may be reinstated after the World Cup. This is just, like the phrase says, provisionally deprived of effect. So we get to see him in a World Cup, that's great, but I hope they throw the whole thing out completely and allow him to go back earning his wages as he was doing beforehand.
Yeah, although he'll take it. Like, even if it goes back to him being suspended when this ends, I think he would have signed up for that, I believe, in a heartbeat. And this is really important for Peru, obviously, for the dynamic of that group. He's the best player on that team. He's the leader. He's the captain of that team in a group where some people thought, you know, his presence could be the difference between what happens with them versus Denmark. So I'm really, really curious to see how it plays out.
Yeah, and I think one interesting aspect of his appeal that we didn't talk about in the Swedish courts was the use of La Donacella, which was the mummified Inca remains of children from the 1500th century who were killed by the Incas. And these children were killed as part of a sacrifice. But the key component to using the mummified remains was that traces of benzoglycosine, the chemical byproduct of the metabolism of cocaine, was found in the children. Also, it was found in Guerrero, which is basically suggesting that these kids these kids were very unlikely to be going around snorting lines of cocaine. And therefore, it seems as if the explanation for how Guerrero got it through the tea, which was also drank at that time, makes some sense now.
couple other managerial appointments that we wanted to mention, one of which was, I think you'd have to say, a long time coming, right? Marco Silva officially getting the Everton job. Sam Allardyce is now a distant memory in the rearview mirror. But we saw, I mean, this has been talked about now, you know, for months.
Yeah, it's all change at Everton with Marcel Brands coming in as the director of football, which probably long term, with the way these appointments go, is the most important appointment for Everton. But Marco Silva comes in and we finally, well, maybe not finally, but maybe we'll get a chance to see how good he actually is, because I thought his time at Watford was a bit stunted. So,
yeah, although, I mean, he proved himself to a certain extent at Watford. We remember how little fanfare there was when he first arrived and what he did for that club. So I don't know. I mean, yeah, maybe if this is a massive failure at Everton, it'll be somewhat of an indictment on him. But I think it's a good appointment, and it's one that I think most Everton fans were hoping happened.
I think in terms of style of football, they'll be very pleased with it.
And then last but not least, Frank Lampard, new manager at Derby County.
Very, very surprised by this. I actually, in the whole mess of the last few days with the Champions League final and everything that's been going on in football, I didn't realize that Gary Rowett, who had taken Derby to the Championship playoff semi-final, he's gone to Stoke. And so the job is over at Derby. And this is going to be Frank Lampard's first managerial appointment, which, let me tell you, folks, it's a huge club to walk into. It really is. They've got massive history. They won the league in the 1970s. The recent history is not so great, but they have a lovely stadium that's it's about 20 years old, I guess. Huge fan base there in the Midlands. And they're knocking on the door of the Premiership. This is, when you look at Gerrard and Lampard's first forays into senior professional management, Andrew, these are big jobs.
Who's entering the more difficult situation or the more pressure-packed situation?
I would say it's probably Gerrard because of the money situation at Rangers. In fact, I would go as far as to say, I'm just guessing, but I'd say Derby County are in a better financial situation. And also as well, the pressure for Gerrard to get close to Celtic is huge and maybe insurmountable, whereas Derby have been knocking on the door of the Premier League for a little while now. So I guess the pressure for Lampard is to continue that and take them to the next level, which is the Premier League.
Which is also a lot of pressure. I mean, they got to the playoff this past season where they lost to Fulham. So, I mean, they're close. And if they take a step back, I think a lot of people will say, why did we go with a manager who doesn't have any experience? We were this close to the Premier League, and then we just went for some big-name hire. This was not right. So you're right. Maybe there's more pressure on Gerrard, but I wouldn't just forget about what's riding on Lampard's time at Derby either.
No, I agree with you. And Lampard said, he spoke to the BBC, he said, I don't have a management CV and don't proclaim to. I have worked very hard in my coaching over the past 18 months. Now he's balanced that with a media job at BT Sports. So, I mean, how hard could he have worked on it? You know, people say experience is important in football, but we kind of saw with the guy we were just talking about, Zinedine Zidane, that he had relatively little experience, well, none of a really big club, and he stepped into the Real Madrid shoes and did a great job. But listen, it's really a trial by fire for both Gerrard and Lampard. And I think you're right. The pressure and the money that's available in the Premier League to a club like Derby County to try and get them up, he's got a tough act to follow in Gary Rowett.
Yeah, certainly does. So there you go, brother. I think that's it for our emergency podcast. Who knew when we woke up today we'd be doing another pod? I should tell everybody Group C, like I said, is out right now. Group D, World Cup preview, should be coming out either later tonight, early tomorrow potentially. So keep your eyes open for that. I'm going to find out where you've been, because something was happening. Your attitude was just off.
I'm dealing with some connectivity issues, and I'm just happen to be in an area that's a little bit noisy. But you're such a Sally. You see, what people don't realize in this podcast, you want this perfect NPR pitch.
Uh-huh.
And it's not always achievable. One thing before we go.
It's what our fans deserve, and I don't like what you're saying right now.
Yeah, well, our fans deserve one more piece of information before we go. This was reported widely today and was released on the Chelsea Twitter feed. Roman Abramovich has personally taken the decision to put the Chelsea Football Club Stadium development on hold after being denied a UK visa. He's unwilling to invest over $1 billion into a country where he is currently not permitted to work. So that's something we have to keep an eye on.
That is, yes, that is very interesting. I saw that this morning. I don't know what the end game is here for Abramovich with this club, but it doesn't feel like it's headed down a great path. I don't know if he's going to sell or what, but they're in a weird spot right now.
I think this is something we'll return to over the summer, particularly after the World Cup.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I hope all of you enjoyed this on this big Thursday of news in soccer. It just never stops. Hey, you get back to doing whatever it is you're doing, all right?
Okay, thanks for the permission.
I'll see you later.
Take you later, fun boy.
Bye-bye.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.